Fantasy Wargaming Podcast. We're your hosts,
Paul
and Tony.
Hey,
little bit rusty.
It's been a while. Seems to be my catchphrase, doesn't it?
We've got a special guest this week as well.
This week? We're on a weekly podcast now, are we?
Yes, that's it. Well, we do a weekly podcast, one in every 26.
That's it. Who we got today, Tony?
We have got the one and only from Proxy Table Gaming. It's not Staff, it's Tom.
Hello. Hey.
Welcome, Tom. How you doing, mate? You well?
Very good, very good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us. New English royalty, sir.
No, absolutely.
Honoured to have you on this podcast. How's life treating you? Keeping well?
Yeah, really good, really good. I had a bit of a break since ECC, so it's been quite nice, actually.
Well, as you can probably gather, we're talking to Tom about the ETC and his experience. Mm. So the reason we got Tom on is, one, he's a great mate. Two, he's a great guy. And three, it's the first time you've been playing for anybody at the ETC, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Well, this is my first year of proper, I'll say proper team tournament, because I did play with Matty P once in a blue moon at one of your tournaments.
You did?
As a team. But yeah, it's the proper... for the proper team tournament as Night Phase, it's the first time I've ever done it. So, yeah, throwing myself in this year.
What was the process? Sorry, I mean, where did this come from then?
Yeah, so I mean, so every year for anybody else wants to go into England, there's an application process around December, January time, and I didn't really think about going in, but as a few other people, I think. Got asked and then I got asked. So I was about 18th down the list. And they said, because nice. I had obviously got into Masters, so Hugh, the captain this year, sent us a text and said, do you fancy it? And I was like, yeah, be cool.
So my issue has always been the family and the missus. Mm. Did you manage to send us somewhere off nice? Take her to New York or somewhere?
Well, he's single now.
Yes.
Happily divorced.
Is that a caravan or a van you're living in the back of?
Absolutely,
your toy soldiers.
Yeah. I'm currently on Tinder as we speak. But no, it was just, I spoke to the missus. I said, but.
Please.
Yeah, the only time I'm going to do it is over this time, and it just so happened it was over my birthday, so I could say, birthday present to me. The trouble is, my birthday is also my anniversary, so there was a bit of negotiating there. But yeah, no, it was I just sort of said, look, I'll go to that, and as one of my weekends away,
I'll go to ETC
a little bit longer. Yeah,
and you can have my bollocks afterwards.
This is savvy. Did you just say that your birthday is on the same day you got married?
Absolutely.
Good man. So that means you can never forget your anniversary.
Can never forget. No.
Or enjoy your birthday.
That's true.
Absolutely. It was meant to be at the time, and so it was one of them.
Awesome. Ah, brilliant, mate. All right. So you kind of got headhunted, as it were, to join the team. And then what was the process after that then? So how did you get to choose what you played? Were you kind of nominated to play a certain race in a certain way? Or how did all that pan out?
Yeah, so even though I sort of got text just saying, do you want to join? I still did the application process, so to speak. So there's like you just basically email the captain, who was Hewitt this year, saying what sort of... why you think you'd be good for England, what armies you play, and whether you'd be willing to change armies and change army lists as you go throughout the year. So you have the option of saying, no, I'm a Sylvan Elf player, or I'm a High Elf player, and I can't really do anything else. But obviously, in a year where you might apply, there might be two or three of those other army generals. I play... three or four armies anyway, so I said I don't really mind what I play as long as I'm doing it and it's sort of like half my style sort of thing.
So did you go in thinking Highborns? Is nobody's playing Highborns?
Oh, I would love to. So I went to Masters as the process went on and got in just before it, and I took my BSB-less highborn flying circus thing, and it was really, really good. But obviously didn't have the BSB, and they were like, "There's no way you're playing without a BSB." I was like, "Oh man, but it's got a dragon. Surely that's okay." So there was a bit of that. I did, if it was up to me completely, and there was nothing else going on, I would have taken high elves. But they sort of said, "Well, do you want to take warriors this year?" And I was like, yeah, that'd be really cool. So I tried a few different warriors lists, actually, for the first quarter of the year, straight after Masters, tried different variations there. But then they were going to change. It was all a bit of like, not politics, but like switching people around to suit the team. So you had some of the better armies in there. So I was on warriors, but then they chose to switch Wes to warriors because we were running a pretty much like a all warrior knight list, and they were like, well, Wes plays knights, so that'd be cool. And at the time, I think KOE, which he was on, was struggling a bit for during the update. They had a bit of a bad update patch where the hippogriffs got taken down a bit or something, so we moved over to that, and he got warriors, then I moved over to vampires, and then never really looked back. Sort of enjoyed it, enjoyed playing them, took a few different variations, and then settled on my list probably about May, end of May, June, which is quite late, really.
Because the list you've been using for ETC, that's not the list you used to use when you played vampires.
No, it's not.
It's quite distinctly different, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
Is it because you were looking at so many options, or is it because you had a role?
No, we didn't necessarily have roles. I think it was more like, because so we had a few people. So there was Tankard, Jake, and Hugh that were really going to be going for the bigger points more regularly. And but by that probably means they were paired for a little bit more than the rest of us. There was a few others that were more blockers that had lists that were designed not to lose really big and or take some of the bad matchups away. So like Darren, for example, on Vermin Swarms. And then a group of us that were just sort of there to pick up the rest and play the game, not lose too big, but not risk too much as well. And I think the old vampire list that I used to play used to be two really killy Brotherhood of the Dragon lords on basic cowboys that just go do all the work. The rest is just there to distract and get objectives and things like that. But it wasn't necessarily the best. It was quite a risky list. So it'd be a lot of little combats here and there that if they swung would make the game pointage quite big. So I got switched to this, and I wanted to try out a few different things. So I've never tried Ghast before, and I'd never really tried Wraiths before, and my list was mainly Wraiths and Ghast.
So you've never played with Ghast before?
No, I didn't have the models. I didn't have the models before April.
Welcome to the club, sir.
Yeah,
first things that go in my list, hey, Ghast.
I know. they were super good, and there was a few little tweaks. So in terms of my list, I sort of had it. I kept it pretty similar for about 2 months, and then after playing it for 2 months, pretty solidly, because I got in so many games. I think I played 68 from January to July. So
I was gonna say how
blitzed it.
Kind of practicing were you getting in? So was that on UB, or was that real life games? Were there weekend practice weekends and stuff? Or?
Yeah, mixture of UB, Warhol mainly. We entered in a lot of online tournaments and things like that. But then obviously the tournaments and also March Victory in Cardiff, and like a couple of practice weekends as well, trying to do that. It was more weekends than I thought it was going to be, actually. in terms of preparation, and then we had a weekly Monday meeting as well. So it was actually doing that and trying to fit in 2-3 games a week was pretty tough, actually. Like much tougher than I thought it would be.
Because that's always been my concern with the ETC. It's not the week away playing games; it's the 6 to 9 months of preparation.
Yeah,
that scares me.
Yeah, and I. I think it was on me to a certain degree. So, like, I don't think you'd necessarily have to play three games a week, do a Monday meeting and do all the tournaments in the world leading up to it. But I thought, well, this is probably going to be my only time I go to ETC for different reasons, whatever. I've got a young family, 5 and 7. It is my anniversary and birthday, so I can't get away with that every year. And I was just like, you know what, let's just dive into it. And I just tried to get in as many games and take in as much info as possible, really.
So did you find your list evolved over the year then as the team changed armies and you kind of took feedback from your results, that kind of thing? How did your list evolve from when you first saw it to how it ended?
So, in terms of vampires, I was only on them for 3 months before ETC, I think, because I did high elves leading up to the end of Jan, then warriors till the end of April, sort of time. Then vampires for March Victory and onwards, really. So in terms of army, it was quite nice to play all those different ones, because I quite like that anyway. I tend to do that throughout the year, switch armies so that I can get like a better idea of all of them, and what they sort of do and what they like to do. But then I stuck with vampires for a good chunk of that 68, probably 38 games. And I stuck with it for ages, the same list, just keeping it the same. And then I had a sort of a biggish tweak where I took on board all the information I brought in. We did like little, what they call game review things, like little log, which was really cool. I really liked doing that. I'm a stat man, so things like that was quite nice. But then I also spoke to a few different people. So I spoke to Tanker and Hugh within the team. I had a few one-to-one training sessions with Hugh, actually, where we went on War Hall. And I was like, right, if I get this scenario, do I deploy like this and things like that? So it was super helpful like that. And Tanker just throughout the year. And then I spoke to Mikey, because obviously he's a pretty good vampire player, right? I think that's pretty understatement of the year. So I spoke to him a little bit, and he said, well, it obviously got to suit you, and I'd do these and some of his tweaks. You know what? Turns out he knows his stuff. Really helped. So then I tweaked it at a biggish tweak, and then little tweaks after that, which was just numbers of units, really, and things like that. And then about 2 weeks before submission date, just stuck with it, and the list was in.
Crux of it as well, you enjoyed playing with the list, didn't you? It wasn't been created for a role and then you kind of had to fit in with it. It was a list that you were actually enjoying playing, suited your play style, and you actually, well, basically you enjoy playing with it. You're spending all that money to an event. And
yeah, exactly. And that's, I just say, I know I moved over to Vampires, but that's what happened with Wes as well. They moved him to Warriors because it was a knight-based thing. But in the end, he tried it for a good long time, and he went, you know what, I just don't enjoy playing it. So they switched him back to KOE, which is, I think, is a, that's good. If you are worried about playing a different list that you're not going to like, then you don't necessarily have to, because they won't force you. Like you say, you pay a lot of money to go, so they're not going to force you to play something you in Wes's case, you hate, just for the sake of the team. Although I tried to change my play style in order to do it. So I struggled for a little bit playing the list I did, because it was so safe, and it's not very like aggressive and those cowboys doing their own thing and whatever. So I struggled for a little bit because I wasn't ever really used to just pushing out a little bit, trying to arc around or anything like that. So I feel like my game knowledge, and it's because of all the help from all the guys, really, just improved a lot throughout the year, and I was much more sensible with my play.
Give us a quick overview of what your list is. Oh, actually, but before we do this, you're obviously Proxy Table Wargaming, so you've got your own YouTube channel. So everything that you did at the ETC, you've got like blow by blow battle reports. So we're not going to go through it kind of case by case.
Totally.
Like a brief overview of your list, as it were. What was in your list? What was it composed of?
Yeah, so I had three courtiers, two of which were Nosferatu Masters, which are like the magical ones. They only had, in terms of combat, only like 4 strength, 6 attacks each, but They were in a unit of skeletons for the most part, with a court, so adding the debuff to things, which is very, very good. Then my other courtier goes in with the Ghast. He's got the Strigoi. I forget what it's called now.
Bestial Bulk.
And he goes in there making them score in while he's with them, etc. Then I've got small unit of Wraiths, loads of chaff.
I mean, say a small unit, it's still 10, isn't it?
No, it's 8. Then that was the compromise, a lot of things. So I did originally go down. So I also have a unit of knights, and I pushed them as low as... I started off with 6 with full command and banner of speed, and they slowly went down to 3 so that I could keep the wraiths and add little bits here and there sort of thing, like Crown of Autocracy on the general, for example, to give me a bigger march. And in the end, I switched those points back into the wraiths back into the knights. So that was like my little tweak. Just the numbers of those units, really.
So you saw my list and thought that night unit's good. I'll have that one.
Yeah, that's it.
Not at all. Okay, so you were saying, so you got wraiths, you mentioned knights. What else was in the list, did you say?
Big unit ghouls, inch core, loads of chaff, unit knights, wraiths, ghasts, and that's it, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, because chaff-wise, were you still using the dogs over the bats?
I took both. I had 2 units of dogs, a unit of bats, and a unit of spirit hosts. Ooh. They were very good. 160 points for ethereal, 3+ Aegis, 16 wounds. Very, very good.
You enjoy playing with them.
Yeah, hard, because they're not like troops, and they don't have a musician. So you have to be really good with them. That was my first few battles.
But 16 wounds with a 3+ Aegis.
Yeah.
Oh, they used to be 2+. I don't know what it is with that. Again, it's down to personal player choice. I think the Vampire book's quite strong in that most of the unit options are viable. So everything's fighting for a place. And then it comes down to player choice as to what you decide to take rather than what's been in the book. Which I think is where all the books should get to, actually. I think that'd be a great place.
It's in a great spot. The latest change, which happened in March, I think, was to basically say that the vampire lines could all sort of mix in with each other. And it just meant it just opened up so many different play styles and mixes and things like that. And it's player choice for whether you go magic heavy, combat heavy, and you can pretty much do it all.
I think as a book, I mean, we might discuss this another time, I think. I don't want to go off into the weeds too much, but as a book, I'm thoroughly loving where the Vampire book is at the moment. Yeah. It's almost like it got a completely new book in the update, just with a few minor tweaks. So
that was, I mean, in terms of the process, that was quite fun in itself, because it was almost like just starting again with the book. And also, normally I'm quite min-maxy on the magic side of things. You want to try and get as minimal, but I had 14 spells.
I know, it's fun, isn't it?
In the end, which was like, and the worst thing about that was I was even trying to convince the team to get one more spell in. It was like the third magic move bound spell thing. I didn't have that, only a double. But I was like, I just need that one, and that'd make it amazing. You've got 14, deal with it.
Yeah, what do you sacrifice to get it in? But
yeah,
fair enough. So you got your list. You got yourself prepped, so...
Hang on a second, just back up about... With your 14 spells, did you not find there were some you never used? Like you were just using the same 6 over and over again?
Surprisingly, no. Of the 14, you've got 3 Arises, which are just the best hereditary in the game, I think. Because it's so repeatable. I had 2 magic moves... then you have the snipes and then the combat buffs. So that it's more of a toolboxy than... So at some point in the game, this group of spells were useful. It was overkill, and it was sort of like almost playing for everything. But it was so useful. I genuinely don't think... I think there was different spells for... Horses of courses, right? But it was... I didn't find... I was going, I never did that. Although, surprisingly, Grave Calls was almost too much. I cast it a lot, but I was finding that maybe Breath of Corruption might be better than Grave Calls. Then I was like, oh, because of the point, the dice sink.
The high cast.
Yeah. That's why, again, won't reminisce on my list change too much. Story for another time, but I changed from occultism to Evo.
Yeah.
Because Grave Calls was just too underwhelming for what the investment of dice. Because there were too many times where I'd just go in and kill two things with 2d6 strength 5. Or 2d6. I mean, when you're sacrificing zombies, you're sacrificing for a giggle. But I just found Grave Calls just far too swiggy. And then once you've cast it, you don't really have enough dice to do Mark for Doom and Breath of Corruption and Pentagram.
Yeah.
So I found myself doing Pentagram, Breath, and... Well, yeah, you know what I mean? At that point, you're kind of risking Grave Calls not going off. So, anyway.
But at the same time, there were some games where Grave Calls was clutch because it just strength 5 and rolled well. You know, so it's give and take. But no, I actually found it really nice.
It's nice having a toolbox, isn't it? I agree with that.
Well,
amongst all this vampire love, I have got to point out that I hate vampires.
Sorry.
It's like the one army I just despise playing. It was that year, probably about 4-year period, Paul, when I just kept losing to your vampires. Well, just put such hatred. Now that's all gone and you regularly lose, it's all right. But in the old...
It was a change from goblins that kept running away from your mortars to zombies that just kept getting back up.
That was my happy period.
Oh dear. So let's move into the ETC experience then. So first of all, hype for actually getting there and getting yourselves organized. What did you do?
Yeah.
How did you kind of plan your week?
I didn't realize I was doing it, but I undersold it to the missus on how long I was going for. Cause I thought it'd be like it's a 3-day thing. So probably 4 or 5 days, whatever. And it ended up being a 7 days basically away.
7 days. Wow.
Well, it was Tuesday to Monday. So I guess 6, but really it's 7.
Did you take it? You flew out.
Yeah, we flew. So, I mean, I was really lucky that Tanker kind of knows all that stuff, and we had a Discord thing chat where all the information's there for what people are doing. So I actually just went up to Tankers with Luke Tranta, who's from Northampton, so picked him up, went there. We traveled, three of us, quite nicely, no interruptions or anything. Went on the Tuesday, had 2 days in the city,
see the sights of the red light district.
Drinking the water and trying the cakes. It was lovely. And so we did that for 2 days. And then we met the Denmark team out, and the USA team as well, who had come back a bit earlier. And then had a meal with the Aussies the day before our Ashes thing. And obviously, they do it. They bring the families and do it a bit bigger than what a lot of others do, because it's a long trip. So I think they plan like 3-4 week holidays around it, which is really, really cool. It's really cool. It's really interesting to hear what they do and how they travel around Europe, and been to Paris and been to England, some of them, because it's around the Formula One as well. So anyone interested in that, they come over to that and saw that, and then ended with the ETC and then went home. So, really interesting to talk through. So we did 2 days in the city, and then we were at the hotel, and I think I got spoiled really for my first ETC, hearing all the stories about it, potentially being in a school here or a hall here or whatever. we ended up with a 4-star hotel and very, very nice. It was really, really good. Quality wise, nice bedrooms, and the food was really, really good. It was at slightly out of the city.
Yeah, it's Schiphol, isn't it?
Which is
the airport.
Closer to the airport than the city is, but decent-ish.
A bit like London Luton.
Yeah, sure.
It's a reasonable equivalent. You've got Schiphol, Amsterdam Airport, Schiphol. London Luton. Yeah, Luton.
Yeah, good 40 minutes outside London.
Absolutely. But we stayed in the hotel Thursday to Sunday, so that was pretty easy for us. We just woke up early mornings, so started at 8. So that was a thing after After most evenings, we sort of go to the bar area, sort of meet up with some others and mainly ourselves to chat through pairings and things like that. But yeah, being up at 8 or ready to start at 8 was interesting.
Well, you just dropped it in there, pairings. So
yes.
How did you guys prepare? I think is the best way. So my experience of like team events is you got to get your pairings right, or before you go in, you got to try. And I think ninth is hard to pair for. Like totally. Back in the days when I used to play like other gaming systems, like eighth or whatever, certain matchups you're always going to win. Whereas ninth, I find, is much more objective based, much more what's in the other person's arm. There's no net lists really, are there? So
no.
You kind of come up against an army and it could be a complete... Well, all the vampire lists were completely different.
Yeah.
With a distinct lack of vampire spawn, which I was both flummoxed by and delighted by, because I'm hoping that vampire spawn come down in points because nobody's taking them.
Yeah, it'd be super good. Yeah,
hopefully super that good. Happens.
Is that not frenzy just being too random for...
Yeah, possibly.
Play better. That's my answer to that.
Yeah, totally. I didn't have them.
So what's your matchup predictions then? How does that
happen? Yeah, so, I mean, throughout the whole year, really, we were doing online tournaments in order to get... Because myself, I'd never really looked at pairings and predictions and things like that before this year. So we entered in a few online team tournaments just so that we could get used to that process. Obviously, we had the Match for Victory team tournament, which I think you guys won.
We
don't like to dwell on it, really.
That's good. But yeah, so we, that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was. It was. And so, yeah, so we had those as like prior experience in doing matchups, then playing the matchup and all that stuff. And still after that, there was some matchups I'd never played. So really, yeah. So in the build-up, there was all that. We tried to get all the matchups done. So literally about a week after submission date. So looking through all the army lists and trying to get all the matchups done before we even flew out there. And we had a pairings weekend where for the first, I had to get time off from the kids and the family to go and talk about Warhammer for a weekend, which was I thought that would be way too intense for me, because you're not playing, not a single dice was rolled in said weekend. And I thought that would be a bit too much for me. I thought that would be a bit, that would be one step too far in that direction. But actually, it was really useful. And we went through the predictions that we'd done, talked through it and saw whether we were right or not. Turns out a lot of it I was wrong, but that doesn't matter. But yeah, so they sort of talked us through why and asked us why we thought it was a green, it was a red, it was a yellow, etc.
And how do you think your predictions did? Just jumping in there, you were saying a lot of them were wrong. Did you find you were naturally conservative and scoring down, or are you an optimist? Because my predictions tend to be always a bit on the optimistic side. I was just wondering. And I've proved myself right over and over again.
Yeah, sure. I think I didn't know too many matchups. So a lot of mine were based on theory than anything and just looking at lists. So there might have been some that we didn't play, for example, that I might have missed some niche things. But generally speaking, I felt like army to army, I knew whether generally that was a good matchup. So like generally, and I'll say that about 10 times, I apologize. But like Sylvan Elves should be a decent one because we can just heal up all the damage they do. And that happened a few times. But that then hopefully if you can get the objective with it, you can nullify some of the points that they've taken through their endless amazing shooting against you. So for example, with Sylvans, I try to be positive, even though I think they're a really good army and could take me off. Knowing like Caps is playing them, or Jamie Payne from when someone has a nickname, the Payne Train, it's hard not to predict against them. But I tried to take the listening thing, and for the most part, I was right. Dwarves, I struggled to. Everyone told me dwarves were a good matchup for me. Well, yeah, for thing. But everyone told me they were a decent matchup for vampires, generally speaking. But I struggle to see how a lot of the time because they just either shut down your magic, shoot you with organ guns, and blah blah blah. But so there were some that I took with a pinch of salt, and but generally speaking, they weren't too bad. And I tried to put as least a little 8 to 12s, the yellow ones, as possible. It was gambit.
You know, picking that you were saying about dwarfs. The thing is, did most of them fall into a very big blocky defensive? Because I mean, Terry was at Cardiff recently, and
with his MSU
came fourth with his MSU, but he also got equal best sports at the same time. So he came fourth with dwarfs, and managed to get a sports vote, which I can only assume was from buying drinks.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, I know. Even the dwarf thing doesn't put people off.
I like playing Terry. I just don't like playing sports.
But that's a very aggressive MSU. Yeah. It's not unkillable and massive blocks.
No, that's it. And there were some blocks and gun lines, I would say, together. And then there was the MSU list. And actually, the MSU list were pretty...
aggressive, pretty, really.
Yeah, and... popular, actually. There was quite a few of them. There was one Fraz I played in practice. I played a few that I didn't know the matchups. For example, because you played the UD for me. Thank you very much. And
badly, though, because we were both learning what the list is.
Yeah. I just remember that where we were focusing on the list and we played marching columns, and I forgot we were playing marching columns.
When you started your deployment.
So I was like, and it was like a week before ETC, and I thought, I'm done.
That's right, because I wouldn't let you.
I'm going to get 20.
You put your second one right in the middle, and then third one, you went to put in the gap. It's like, no. It's get your army guns in that little space you've left yourself, mate.
Yeah. It was so funny. So there was one with Fraz. I hated his list because he has a runesmith that takes channel away down to one, and I'm like three that channel, sort of thing, and mine is it just took away all the fun things that you had, is what I saw that listed. I tried to play as many of the predictions that I didn't know, but also I tried not to sit on the fence too much, even if some of the greens I personally thought were a yellow, but knew that the list should do better.
So you went. You mentioned the first set of games when you got to the hotel, and sobered yourselves up. It was the Ashes, was it? Was that the first game?
Yeah, we had a practice against USA, which was really cool, and I got to play caps, so that was awesome. And then the Ashes against Australia, so. Neither of which went great for the team. so we just class them as practice games. We'll say no more.
Yeah.
How did you
even the fabled Ashes? I didn't do too bad, actually. I got an 11 against Caps and a 13 against it was Sylvan's Jamie Payne. So I played Sylvan's twice. I kind of went into the tournament going, I don't really want Sylvan's and I don't really want Dwarves, but it's not because of the list. It's because I don't really like them. And I played two Sylvan's to start off with. So you're like, oh, God.
So when you went into those, were you kind of predicting yourself to be getting like that kind of result? Was that what you were looking for?
Yeah, I predicted both a 12 to 15. So the green sort of thing. As well, the objective... what were they? Oh, yeah, one was breakthrough, which was ish. But I've got enough magic movement. And if I just move up on one side of the thing, it should be all right for vampires. And the other one was spoils. And I think... both of those I got the first turn, so I was happy enough to keep to the 12. And it was just the one against Jamie, actually we only played three turns, and then he said, well, I'm just going to run away, so we'll call it 1378. I was like,
okay. I was going to say turns in 3 hours, play faster.
Oh,
4 hours, isn't it? How long's a round?
No, it's 4 hour rounds. We had a couple of points after that. that was all right. But so personally, for me, I did all right in those first two. And it was quite nice to get a bit of confidence against Sylvan's and against two like decent, experienced ETC players as well. So that was pretty cool.
So what happened with the team overall then? I mean, obviously, don't go into too much detail, but was it matchups? Was it a bit of bad luck? Was it just outplaying?
Yeah, there was, there was a few. There was a few. I know, like with Tanker, like there was a few, he got like either really really good or really bad, and I think that's just, and Hugh did that as well. But those lists were aiming to push the opponent to get points. So I think, and I think some of the times just when the, like, I think Tanker had a few games where his dice, surprisingly, and I, this would be on thing, were bad.
That never happens.
I know. I feel like I experienced something rare. But yeah, no. So it just it's surprising that when people come just on like one under the prediction, or like one bracket under the prediction, how, if like two or three people do that, how low your score gets. We had a smallish loss against America, and then a cap loss against Australia. Although the Australia one was Hold the Centre, actually, and they had a lot of, their lists were like push lists a lot of the time. So generally, over the thing, they had, that was a really good objective for them, I think, is what I'm told.
So when you were going,
and that's our excuse, and we're sticking to it.
Well, I suppose I know the answer to this, but when you were going into the Ashes, did you expect to win, or were you expecting? I mean, it was always going to be close-ish because they're good, good team. But
yeah, one thing I did do on the YouTube stuff is I did the predictions, or I showed the matchups and the predictions that we predicted. So most rounds, even those two, we were predicting small to big wins, like on every single round. And I'm sure that happens for them, for our opponents as well. You know, that's one thing I'm not experiencing it really. I'm sure both teams were looking feeling confident going.
I remember this at the Ocho. When it was an 8-man team event, I don't know if you remember, but it was yourself, me, Tony, and 5 other guys.
Staff.
And I was captaining. And I was going into these matchups based on the information you guys had given me, coming out thinking, pretty all right, guys, I've got 6 greens here. Yeah. And then we get smashed.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Some of these matchups weren't green, were they?
Yeah, I mean, for example, in our round one against Denmark, we played the game, and actually that was probably my closest to time game because it was Vampire Roth. So it was it was the most eventful 10-10 I've ever been a part of, but it was still a 10-10. And I got back and I was like to Tom, the coach, I was like, I've got a 10, 8-12 prediction, so it come good. But I probably could have got a few more points if I didn't play so badly. Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, okay, cool. And I was like, how'd the rest of the team go? And he goes, well, your 10 is the highest result.
Yeah,
I was like, what?
That was good.
Yeah,
it looked like your first game against Denmark went, well, your first game was all right, but everybody else, like you say, went a little bit pear-shaped.
Oh, is that the first round then? So it was Denmark, wasn't it, first?
Yeah, Denmark first, and then we had Luxembourg second. And then I played High Elves, which was quite nice to, well, quite nice to play because I liked the list, but it was a better list than mine. I was like, oh, I wish I played that. That would be real cool. Yeah, dragons and things like that.
So without going into the games too much, what was the sort of profile of the game? So the first round, overall score for England was a little bit below.
No, we got capped first round.
I was being polite.
Yeah. I think we were glad of the cap. You know, that's how bad we did. And then we won Luxembourg. Not quite a cap for us, but it was in the 90s. So that was cool. Got a small loss and then a big loss against Netherlands and Argentina day two. As a team, and then day three was a big win against Serbia, and then to finish Wales. What a finish! What, I was buzzing, guys. I was so buzzing to play Wales last game of ETC because it was for obviously bragging rights for that game as well. But we were actually, because of the big win against Serbia, and Ireland started really well and got a bit lower as the tournament went on. We were actually looking good for home nations, top home nations. So that became our only goal. At all costs, get home nations. And so overall, we ended up 17th at 28. But we lost to Wales. We were 10 points up and we lost by 8 points. So we technically, and it was mad. It was mad. Because we had one game that was predicted a 15 plus that we come back with 4 points in. And then the rest were like, but that one took ages to play. So we're like, all the others, we were looking good. And I played Jack Austin in a really interesting game. And I ended up getting 13 from him in a 5-8 matchup because he plays the Vanguard in Seekers in your face. I'm going to kill you. And has been doing really well with them. So I was like, oh, God. But I mean, as well with that, I say in the bat report, he come over to me and goes, oh, so how do you think this matchup is? And I was very wary because they told me not to tell. So I said, yes, and a 10 to 12 for me. Whether he bought that or not, I'm not sure. I don't think he really bought that. But really, I put it down as a 5-8. So again, 13, I was super chuffed. And then we got some of the good results in. And then we had the 4 from our big win. I'm like, whoa, let's put it back to even. And it was one of those games or rounds where as the score come in, we're winning. Oh, shit, they're winning. Oh, we're winning again. So it was that was really cool. And that was it. For me personally, it was a wicked end to ETC and having that sort of those emotions going on. And then obviously getting that top end nation was class.
So what was the stress like of the games? Because team events, there's a lot of pressure. And I should imagine with a build up like that as well, there's a lot of pressure to perform. Did you find overall people were very serious about it?
I was surprised at how nice everyone was because I thought that people would be nice, but like just it wasn't that stressful. The stress came from me purely. Like my own desire not to get 20'd every game, you know.
Yeah, well, play well.
But actually, like for example, the high elf game I played, I got super lucky, and he basically charged. I had my two vampires with my general BSB and my ghoul bunker, which were at the time. So I moved them out of the skeletons, and he charged his Nova Flare and dragon in. Got both in. And did 3 wounds in total, including the stomps. And then I beat him up. And the guy, how on earth he took that well, I'm not sure. But he played it so well. He was the Luxembourg captain. And we had a bit of fun over it. And it was, there was obviously that underlying thing of we've all got to do well for the team. But it was a really nice atmosphere. And I was actually quite surprised by that. I thought it would be a lot more. And I've heard stories about people, and I'm sure that still goes on. I think I just got a bit lucky with all my opponents being pretty cool.
I mean, how did you go in with it? I mean, there's a couple of things, again, in my naivety, I've never done it. But from hearing, you've got things like the language barrier, but then you've got things like people rolling dice, and it's got to be flat on the table. It can't be on a card and that kind of thing.
Is there any general rules to that? Like, is it up to you to decide? Like the rolling dice thing? Is it covered in the rules pack, or do you agree?
I guess we were quite lucky in that all the gaming mats were printed on. So all the terrain was 2D printed on the mats themselves. And the mats themselves also had all the lines for deployment, the objectives. They were awesome. Really, really cool. Not like I prefer 3D terrain and things like that, but in terms of just focusing on the game and having that was such an easy, nice way to settle all that. So there wasn't too many, I guess, sometimes if you roll on terrain or paper and things like that. So it was just a general agree with the opponent at the start and then carry on from that. I didn't have any complaints. Normally you do cock dice. So we sort of said if it's not flat, then you can roll it. But we didn't have any paper scenarios or anything like that. Or for the most part, there wasn't too much terrain to get in the way either. So again, perhaps a bit spoiled for my first ETC, but it worked really, really well having those mats.
All right, let's get some juicy bits. What was the most interesting part of the event then? Go on, tell us an interesting story. Doesn't necessarily need to be gaming-based. What happened?
I guess this isn't to do with the games at all, but me and Wes spent a lot of time together in that because we sort of bunked up in the things. And, firstly, the hotel... The strap line for the hotel was clean and cheap. in Amsterdam, which I guess is a good thing, like if they're promoting their cleanliness. But it was about I don't know how far, but in American terms, I guess one block over to the Red Dot District. So it's pretty close to that.
Wow. Okay. And
obviously, there's all the signs in the hotel. You go up and you get all the signs saying no guests. fair enough. But I was with Wes, so there wasn't any chance of that, I don't think. We get into that. The hotel has so many stairs as well. I'm not a stair man, as you can imagine. And like they got steeper as you went up the different floors as well. So you get up three steps, you're like, oh, okay. Or like three sets of steps, you're like, all right. And then the next one is just basically a ladder. You're like, oh, God, bloody hell. Not do that. We did for the second day in Amsterdam, we sort of went around and sort of did a bit of exploring. And me and Tanker went to some of the bars as well. Like I said, try the cakes and things like that. Yeah, at the end, I was walking back with Wes after speaking to the USA lot. And he was like, I've been here like three times now and I've never been to the red light district. We're like, all right, let's go. And he was like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And gradually we were joking that his requests were going to be more and more crazy like that. And as we go along, but we went there. I don't know whether you guys have ever been to the Red Light District. It's surreal how, and so you just walk in and then you sort of go down an alleyway and you go into it and you go, oh, okay, there's a mannequin there. Oh, that's not a mannequin. oh, right. Well, one of the women, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to judge any of them, right? But one of them was on Candy Crush on her phone.
Just chilling.
Just in the window, chilling on that. I was like, that's one thing I didn't expect. But yeah, we went along and we were saying about, like, obviously you go down and it was rammed. There's so many people. And there's all the sex shows or whatever. But it's so surreal to see people go up and just genuinely have a chat with people in the windows and things like that. So that was an experience for sure for a nerd like me and Wes.
Boobs.
A surprising that's a surprising lack of nipple I did see actually. I was expecting to see everything and I saw a girl with fully clothed playing Candy Crush. No, that's well, I weren't up for that.
You have to pay for more, chap. I don't think you understand how it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you got to pay for her to come off the phone. That's the century we live in now these days.
Yeah, that's it.
But no, fair. So as going back to the gaming then, so as a team, did you achieve what you were setting out? Obviously, top home nation is a solid result because you're at the ETC. It's not an easy field. I mean, going into it, were you thinking like podium? Were you thinking top 10? Were you thinking top third?
I think there was a unwritten realization that perhaps we weren't the best England team ever to grace the ETC-ness.
Oh, but don't do yourself a disservice, mate. You had a reasonable team out there, so.
Yeah, we did. And as the year went on, we sort of grew a bit, especially, but we had three new people that had never been to ETC before, myself, Darren and Wes, and that was quite nice, actually, sort of going through it with them and not being the sole newbie trying to catch up with everyone. And obviously, you got Jake, Josh, Hugh, and Tanker and Luke actually, they're pretty well experienced at ECC. So actually, it wasn't like the worst, but having like the Mikeys and the Craigs is
Tonys and myself. I know
the Tonys. That's
what you want.
You know, the different. You know, I don't think I'm doing myself down to say that I'm not at that level. So there was and I'm playing Mikey's army, right? So I've got to try and keep up with that. But I don't think we were hoping for top half, I think, realistically. Obviously, you hope to podium, right? That's what you go there for. But some of the teams there are just really, really good. really good. So we were hoping for top half. We were hoping that if we come up against one of the home nations, we beat them, which unfortunately we didn't. And then we were hoping for top home nation, I think, was a realistic result. So we got 17th out of 28, so not quite top half. But we did get top home nation, so that was good.
Yeah, I think, like you say, top home nation, and you came 17th, just goes to show how strong the field is, really.
Yeah, totally.
It's an interesting conversation because, again, not really got involved too much in this, but people kind of look at that and think, really? England, or the UK, as it were, with such a strong tournament scene, the birthplace of Warhammer, surely we should be doing better. But I think people need to realise we submit, is it three teams? Four teams, technically, if you include Ireland.
Four.
Although for some reason they do a United Ireland, although that's quite controversial in Ireland if you talk about it.
I mean, the USA one, I think for me, is the odd one. You think how big the USA is and continent. They only get one team. That's so harsh, no, I reckon.
Australia, same thing. It's the size of a continent. Yeah. Although, okay, population-based, not quite sure. The same as America. But
Russia. No, absolutely. And we, top home nation for us was really good because you had teams like Ireland that were decent. Like Wales had a really, really, really strong team this year. Some of the players on there and some of them were going into the ETC really on form as well. So to actually, for me, to come out as top home nation, I'm pretty happy with that. I'm quite content.
You should be proud of yourself. And also personal results. But again, I think team event is a little bit difficult to look at personal scores because especially when you've been paired into it. But I think at the same time, you've got to hold your water and you did well. I think being paired into these games, and I think you did reasonably well out of all of it. I mean, what were your six results over the event?
Yeah, so in the ETC itself, I got four wins, a draw, and a loss.
Yeah.
So I got a 19, 13, 11, 10, another 11, and a 6. So, I mean, solid. I didn't get 20'd, I didn't want to be 20'd. And I also say in the YouTube stuff, I wanted at least one win where I felt like I deserved a win. You know, I controlled the game and I got that, thankfully, against Serbia. So that was really cool. Against Dwarves, ironically.
There you go.
It was the ironic thing is the two Dwarves I played was the best games I result wise I had, and I wouldn't have,
a reasonable matchup for VC just from experience. Dwarves generally, even Jack Austin's list, I was looking at it thinking should take a 30. It depends, a lot of it's objective based, but as matchups go, just the way the dead work, it's a bit of a nightmare sometimes for them, but well, proof's in the pudding. You got the results.
Exactly.
Even that's all that matters.
Player like me got it. So
post-ETC, how'd you feel?
Yeah. At the minute, I'm still kind of on the come down from it, even though it's been well over a month now, a month and a half. I'm just nice. It's just nice having the casual games back in there. I played two or three just casual games online against people. And that's been nice just to play my own stuff. I played another Vampires list with two Shrieking Horrors. I've never played them before, so that's really cool.
Back in the box, yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't do Shrieking Horrors at the moment. I'm struggling with them.
Yeah, they're all right. Well, they're a one that need four arises, but yeah. It's nice just to chill out and not really think about having to squeeze games in and get a bit of time in with the family and start playing football again, so that's good.
Okay. Fair play, mate. Fair play.
Mm.
And do you think you're definitely not going next year? I reckon another month, a little itch.
It might
not be on your anniversary next year. Exactly.
We have had a discussion.
There it is.
No wonder you're on best behaviour at the moment.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, so just to explain that, really, I normally go to, say, fives, possibly six tournaments if you count the Masters Open that we normally do the production for, a year. And I kind of already did that in the 6 months leading up to it, not counting ETC. So I was like, so I'll have a bit of a break and then see where we're at next year. But surprisingly, my missus brought it up and said, do you want to go again? And I was like, oh, if it's a case of want, I absolutely do.
We all want to go.
Amazing experience. I'd prefer it to be a bit cheaper. I'm not going to lie. The thing this year was quite expensive overall. But if I get the chance and the dates coincide with other dates, I think I will be going. But it's purely down to the dates.
Stars need to align, don't they? I need them to move it away from the summer holiday. Being a family man and just, it's just never going to work. It's a dream that I've always had, but just never been able to commit to. So, I've got to be picked first.
Well, that's it.
Get ahead of myself.
Even though I sort of had the thing, I would say that with some of the players coming back and the armies that they play, I think I'd apply again if the dates coincide and we go from there. I'm hoping I put in a decent performance enough to get in, but no hard feelings if not. There's some good players around.
Do you know who the next captain's going to be?
No, we don't know the captain. I think the first thing that happens is the bids go in. So end of September, the bids for the next ETC happening. There's already one from Austria, and I think Poland and maybe Spain are going to put one in, but there could be some others as well. Then the current captains will vote on where to go and the times and stuff like that. And then I think England captain will be decided after that when all the dates and all the venue and the bids are in, have been decided. So then after that, the new captain decides how he wants to do the...
become a dictator, take over. Yeah. I will not relinquish my captaincy.
I think the old captain or the current captain gets first dibs on being captain next year. But I think Hugh also said that he's going to put it up for a vote regardless of how he did this ETC because of the way it fell on him, I think, this year.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for filling us in. It's been great talking to you about it. Yeah, it's one of these things where you hear things, but it's nice to actually talk to somebody who's been, this is your first event. You thoroughly enjoyed yourself.
And I make it similar to how, like, if you haven't gone to a tournament for the first time, like if you go to tournaments and you play regularly, definitely try for an ETC in any of the countries that all the different countries that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. If you're from Sweden and all that stuff, definitely go to the ETC if you get a chance, because it's not as, I don't know. I went into it thinking it would be half fun and half gamey, and it's not as gamey as you think. And there really aren't that many people that are super, no, you can't do that because you've wheeled half an inch more or anything like that. And everyone's genuinely super happy to meet you when you're out there. And I had a great time. I'd do it again in a heartbeat if I could. And I liken that to going to your tournament for the first time. You're a bit scared when you first go and you don't know how people are going to be. And you think some people might, not like the way you play or whatever or what you do, but you go there and everyone's wicked. So you just want to go to more and you get the bug, and that's kind of where I'm at with ETC at the minute.
Yeah, it's a fun scene in the UK. So I don't know what it's like abroad, but it sounds like it's the same thing. Good group of guys.
Yeah, totally.
So it's really good, mate. Thanks very much. It's nice to be back podcasting again. Thanks for giving us the incentive. We've been meaning to do this for a little while, but with August and stuff, it's just holidays and but hoping to get a few more shows in. Hopefully we'll get our buzz back, Tony. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Get some more shows in the bag. Well,
weekly, right?
Well, that's what Tony was signing weekly us up buzz to earlier.
Yep.
See if we can perform, sir.
That's guaranteed to happen. Yeah.
But no, in all seriousness, mate, thanks for coming on this evening. It's been great
chatting. No, not at all. Thanks for having me. Yeah,
look forward to our next game down the club soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Bye.
Adios.
difference between a chickpea and a lentil? I didn't pay 50 euros in Amsterdam to have a lentil on my face.
Oh. Yeah, that wins.
That's good. It was good because I didn't read it beforehand.